Welcome to the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast with your host, Andrew Keel. This is the podcast where you can get the education you need to invest 100% passively in the highly profitable niche of mobile home parks.
Hey, this is Andrew Keel, host of the Passive Mobile Home Park Investing Podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today. Going to do something a little bit different. We're going to talk about 10 common mobile home park due diligence mistakes, and I'm going to dive right in. The first one is not getting a zoning certificate or discussing setback requirements with the zoning department prior to buying an infill project. This is so, so important. And for those of you watching on YouTube, I'm going to share my screen and show you what this looks like. Typically, you can contact a zoning department and request one of these, and that some may charge you for this, but most won't. It's basically a simple letter that they will fill out, you know, talking about if it conforms with the current zoning, you know, for the property. And if it doesn't, they'll put it in there that, hey, it's grandfathered in. But there's one line in this zoning certificate that I want to bring your attention to. And it says, the property owner is free to remove or fill in any mobile homes on vacant lots. This is really important right there, because some zoning departments may have like age restrictions on the age of the home that they'll allow you to bring in. We own one property out in Nebraska where literally the head of the zoning department has to go drive and look at the mobile home before we bring it in to confirm that it will, you know, work. Or we have to buy brand new homes to bring those in. And then even the brand new homes, we have to get up to their certain code where it needs to be like wired in smoke detectors and some other things that meet that city's code. So talking to the zoning department is a huge thing you must do, you know, before buying a mobile home park. And don't just talk. I'm big on getting something in writing from them, just like this zoning letter here, to make sure that works. All right. So we talked about the zoning letter, talking about setback requirements. If you have vacant lots and you're going to bring in homes, you need to make sure that the setback requirements, you know, meet the code, right? So if back in the day it's grandfathered in and you had a park with a bunch of, you know, 12 foot wide homes, and now when you order homes from the factory, they're 16 foot wide, you know, or bigger typically, mostly 14 to 16 foot wide. And if you're going to encroach on the distance between the homes on either side of you and put a 16 foot wide home in the middle, you may not have the setback requirements that the zoning requires. And the fire chief typically is who doesn't like this, because if your distance between homes is not big enough, a fire can jump from home to home to home to home and burn multiple down. So you want to make sure you talk to zoning about that and you get details if you're going to be bringing homes to fill those vacant lots, especially if the homes are not the same size as the original homes that were there. So that was number one. Number two, not accounting for property tax increase in year two. That is a huge, huge deal. I'll share my screen again and show you some details on this. You know, property taxes are going to go up. Property taxes year after year will likely go up, right? Like, it's not a guarantee, but it might as well should be. But not accounting for an increase is setting yourself up for failure, right? Because when the assessor's office comes around and looks at the sale data and sees that you bought a property for $2 million and, you know, 20 years ago, the previous owner bought it for $400,000, well, there's an increase in value there. And if their taxes that they've been assessing your property on are based on a property value of, you know, $400,000, well, you got a big delta there that they're going to come after you and try to get that additional income from. So this is a property that we're actually looking at in Florence, South Carolina. And our process to look at the increase in property taxes is quite involved. So let me show you this. This is the underwriting. So taxes now are $12,000 with the current owner. But this property, you know, hasn't sold. That was off the 2023 tax bills. The property hasn't sold in a very long time. So, you know, and the property assessed value was quite low. I think it was like $600,000 that the property was assessed at, where we're buying the property now at multiple millions of dollars and the property taxes are going to go up. So typically we see like a 50% increase, maybe 100% increase, but this one's going from 12,000. We literally called the assessor's office and said, hey, we're buying the property for this price. you know, this is how much we're paying for land, goodwill, et cetera. And what do you think our property taxes are going to go up to? And they said it's going to be likely around $42,000 in year two when this gets reassessed. So that big jump right now, imagine if you're paying, you know, for this income stream and you miscalculate literally $30,000 in NOI because you didn't account for the taxes to go up, the property taxes to go up. So that's a huge deal. And that's on all commercial real estate, not just mobile home parks. But I think it's important to mention. Let me show you. So this is like a, if you're watching my screen, you can see like this is a screen here where it goes through the property tax audit, the contact information. So this is part of our due diligence checklist that we look at other mobile home parks in the same county and look at, hey, when did they sell last? What was the sale value? And then what was the assessed value? And you can see this one, 2013, last sale date, sold for $400,000, and the current assessed value is just under that, $399,000. Well, if this property sells for $2 million, right, what's going to happen to the property taxes? They're obviously going to go up. So we try to look at other mobile home parks in the area that have sold recently and their property taxes before and property taxes after. What did they get reassessed at? Was it all the way to the purchase price? Because all that is public data that you can find out on the assessor website. So just make sure that you're accounting for that increase. I was looking at a pro forma for a syndication deal recently that I was considering investing in, and they just had 5% property tax, you know, estimated increases year after year for the first 7 years. And I was like, wow, you know, the property that we're looking at here is a $26 million property, and you're only accounting for property taxes to go up 5% in, you know, from year one to year two. So every state and county assessor is a little bit different. Some of them only assess like every 3 years or, you know, even years or odd years. So it's not a, you know, a hard and fast rule, but you want to account on property taxes likely going up. Number three, ordering a boundary survey over an ALTA survey. So when I first got started out, you know, I was going cheap. I was just getting the boundary surveys. I was using local banks to do these deals. And those banks didn't even require a survey. Little credit union type of lenders. But when I would go to refi and use an agency lender, they would require an ALTA survey be done. And it's more expensive. It's like $5,000 for an ALTA survey, where a boundary survey is maybe $1,200. So I was getting these boundary surveys, thought it was great. I'll share my screen again and show you what these look like so you can just check it out. But what I didn't know early on is that a boundary survey is basically just like, you know, confirming the parcel, right? Confirming that, you know, where your property lines are and things like that, which is valuable, right? You can give that to the title company and they can cross-reference to make sure that, hey, you're buying what you think you're buying and there's not like multiple parcels or something like that for the mobile home community. But this is what a boundary survey looks like, right? Like just kind of an outline of the parcel, kind of discussing how many acres there are and so forth, where an ALTA survey, I mean, it's worth its weight in gold. Literally, the ALTA survey will mark where all the mobile home trailers are, and it'll show you the distance, you know, the setback requirements between each home and from the street and from the curbs. It'll also show you, let me see if I can zoom in here. It'll also show you all the utility connections and all of the utility locations and where the sewer lines are, where the water lines are, where the mains are, where the water meters are. All of that information is so, so valuable. And here's why. I was doing a deal last year and we had a boundary survey when we bought it. We were going to refi out of our credit union, you know, lender into a Fannie Mae loan. And we had to use a vendor for the ALTA survey that was an agency debt approved vendor. So we're using them. They're doing the ALTA survey. And they find out that out of this 82-lot mobile home park, I think it was 5 or 6 homes had gas lines, live gas lines running underneath the back of the homes, because in the old days, this park had older homes in it that were shorter and those got moved out at some point and new homes got brought in that were longer. And the tail end of these homes was sitting over the gas lines, which is a big no-no, life safety hazard, et cetera. So literally the whole refinance got put on hold until we could get those gas lines rerouted around from being underneath those homes. And the ALTA survey is what showed us that. So I just recommend for new operators out there or anybody interested, don't go with the boundary survey. It's worth the money to get the ALTA up front to make sure there's no encroachments on the property or there's no mobile homes sitting over the property line into, you know, like we had a property where there's a railroad track behind it. And like three or four of the homes were sitting over the property line into the easement for the railroad company. And it's been that way forever. And, you know, everybody's like, it's not that big of a deal. But, you know, the ALTA survey showed us, you know, hey, this is an issue. It's over the lines, so that you can adjust that with the seller and say, hey, we have this issue here. We may have to move these three homes if the railroad company comes and says, hey, you need to do that. So you can do, you know, a credit at closing to account for having to move those three homes back into the parcel. So that's a big one. Don't go cheap. Going on to number four here. This is a big one. Like, this should be number one probably, but not reviewing 12 full months of water and sewer utility bills and usage numbers. That is important because you're going to see stuff like this. Let me see if I can show you. You're going to see stuff like this. This is a park that we were looking at buying, and you'll see that the usage numbers here is around 250,000 gallons for this time period from October to November 23, 250,000 gallons. And then watch what happens here. So this is October. We go to the November statement. Now it's at 290,000 gallons, right? Used. Just looking at the usage number right here. And that was from November to December. And then from December to January, that goes up to 350,000 gallons used. And then from January to February, it goes to 430,000 gallons used. So what is that telling us? That's telling us that, bro, you got a water leak and you may have multiple water leaks and you got to get these things fixed ASAP. So you don't want to go into a property in March or April after seeing these water bills right when like the water leak is at its peak problem, right? So you need to get American Leak Detection out there and check this out. So we just paused this deal and said, hey, Mr. Seller, you need to have American Leak Detection go out, find this leak, fix it, or you need to give us a credit at closing. But it's really hard to quantify that without paying American Leak Detection $4,000 to go out there and inspect this. So check the water utility bills. And then also, when you find a spike like this, I like to go to the seller and say, hey, you know, the numbers are spiking. It looks like you have a water leak. Who fixed this leak for you? And they'll say, oh, it was Roto-Rooter or it was Joe's Plumbing. And then you say, okay, well, you know, can I please speak with them? You get their number, you get them on the phone and you say, hey, what's going on with the water lines here? Looks like you fixed the leak in February. That was pretty bad. You know, is this a recurring issue? How often are you out to the park? And they're like, for that specific park that I just was looking at the water bills, he said, hey, I, about 3 months ago, before the seller listed this property for sale, I told him that he needs to replace all the water lines in the park because they're all corroded and they're falling apart. And the shutoff valves are trash and everything is bad. And it's going to cost him around $350,000 to replace the water lines. And that was not in the listing. That was not, you know, no one mentioned that. No one was willing to share that information until I got that plumber on the line. So definitely worth, you know, 5-10 minutes to make a phone call to talk to the plumber that the seller used to fix their most recent water leak. And I would say also, like, water leaks are common, like the ones underneath the homes where a tenant didn't have their PEX lines insulated going into the winter and the lines froze, and then they got a leak under their home that needed to be, you know, thawed out and then re-insulated and heat taped. You know, so it's common to see a spike in like January when it's really cold, and then it gets fixed and then it goes back down and normals out through the rest of the year. But when you see month after month after month, the water bills are just going up and it's skyrocketing, you don't want to catch a falling knife. Another tip here is talking to the tenants, right? Walk through the park before you buy the park and say, hey, how has the water and sewer utilities been here? I'm looking for a place for my mom, you know, in her other park. They had issues constantly with, like, you know, iron in the water and things like that. And just ask around if there's any issues in the last year or so. And if they say, oh yeah, the water's shut off, you know, once a week because they have water leaks, or, oh man, my bathtub backs up, you know, a couple times a year when there's a, you know, when there's a lot of rain, you know, those are issues you want to know up front, not after the fact, because they can get expensive. Another sheet that we have here that I can show you, let me share, is in our due diligence file. We have a utility bill audit sheet that we do in due diligence, where we take the utility bills, we insert them into this graph and look at usage month over month to see the percentage change. And this is really, really important because a lot of times, you know, some parks will have multiple utility accounts. There'll be like, you know, different parcels. So there might be multiple master meters that are feeding the park. And same thing with sewer. Right. So you got to know, hey, what are we looking at here? And how are these, you know, adding up? And then look at all the utility accounts that they have open and make sure you're auditing those. Real quick here, going into number five, not ordering a phase one environmental inspection. This is really, really key. I mean, this is like a deal killer. You know, if you took the MHU boot camp with Frank and Dave, he talks about it. Always order a phase one. You know, the average cost for one of these, I think, is around $2,000. But they're going to do not only the computer work, the computer research to see if there was any underground storage tanks or, you know, other environmental hazards, right, that you don't even know about. A lot of these mom and pops that owned mobile home parks, there was one park where we found like a huge oil drum that was buried and, you know, he was filling it up with gas and other things. So underground oil tanks for heating. We found a whole park where every mobile home had an underground, you know, heating oil tank, like right behind the home. So there's a lot of those things that you want to make sure you know about up front, because your credit union lender might not catch it, but your agency lender engineering report, Alta survey, and so forth will catch it. And then, you know, you're going to have to come out that money when that could have been proceeds for your investors, for your owners, that you wouldn't have had to spend. So it's good to know it up front. There was another mobile home park that was going around for a long time that was built on an old landfill. Think about the environmental, you know, issues with that. Literally built on top of an old landfill. You know, we consulted with an environmental engineer on that because we were looking at it. And once we found this out, he said, yeah, there could be gas pockets that can bubble up over time and can, you know, hurt people. Imagine like a little girl running through the mobile home park and then all of a sudden something, you know, pops up like that and can cause, you know, an injury. It's just not worth the risk. And the new owners take over this responsibility from the old owners at a sale point. So it's an arm's length transaction in commercial real estate. So you really got to know upfront what you're getting into. On a phase one environmental report, I can show you what one of those looks like. Phase one environmental reports, you're looking for what's called RECs, R-E-Cs. And basically those are, I think it's like recognizable environmental conditions that would then require a phase two inspection to like get the full picture of. But yeah, basically it's a huge report, like 69 pages. And you really want to go into each section and look at what they find, because they find a lot of information about, you know, any previous history that the site was used for, along with, you know, any underground storage tanks and if they were removed properly or what the case was. And then, you know, the big section that, you know, has the most value in it to me is all the way at the bottom going to the conclusion, right? Like, hey, what's the conclusion? Was there any wrecks found or not? And then you can see things like this. Oh, here's the septic drain field. Here's some storage sheds. And here's the pump house for the well, you know, and it'll give you a really good idea of what you're looking at, along with active photos of, you know, items that could be an environmental concern to the property. So, but at the bottom there, we'll say, hey, this is a wreck. This is not a wreck. And any recommendations for, you know, solving that in the future. Item number six, not walking behind the mobile homes, only walking in front or driving through the park when doing your due diligence trip. This is a huge no-no. Highly recommend making sure you walk behind the homes. Big reason why is you're going to find things like this. Check out this photo right now. If you're watching on YouTube, you could see this photo right here. Walked behind a mobile home, you know, line, and you can see it's literally like a jungle. There are homes everywhere. There's trash. There's literally cars and trampolines parked behind these homes. So you want to know what you're getting into, and it's really hard to see if you don't get out of your car and walk behind the homes. Another thing we saw is a sewer line that connects underneath of a mobile home, like where people flush the toilet and things like that, had come like unhooked. And so every time they would flush, it would just pour on the ground. And after like a year, this had seeped all under the home and was coming out the sides and prevented this, you know, caused this really nasty smell for all the neighbors. So walking behind the homes and not just driving in front of them will help you potentially avoid issues like that. You know, puddles of water, drainage, sewage coming from under the homes. Number seven, not going inside all the park-owned homes. You know, it may look fine on the outside. And, you know, you may drive by and say, okay, that's an occupied lot. The lights were on at night. You know, we drive through our parks at night. Looks habitable, looks fine. But then when you get inside of these things and you see what, you know, people are living in, you may change your mind entirely. Here is a live example of that. This is one home that we came across for those of you watching on YouTube. And on the outside, I mean, it kind of looked suspect. You know, we didn't believe this was occupied. Then we drove by at night and saw some lights on. And then we actually did a walkthrough of the home with the owner. And it was like a hoarder situation where literally there was just stuff everywhere, trash. I mean, look at this. Like, there's like a cup full of, you know, just beer and like just stuff all over the floors. So someone was actively living in this. This is like how they live there every day, was in these type of conditions with trash everywhere. And it was just disgusting. So, you know, this type of home, there was like roof leaks and so forth, you know, just knowing that, hey, it's occupied, but the second it becomes unoccupied, it's going to be a problem. And we're probably going to have to demo the home. So knowing that there's more risk there and we need to have more reserves in case of an issue like this is really important. Number eight is not accounting for the costs associated with getting all the park-owned home titles. Missing titles to mobile homes is a super common thing when you're buying a mobile home community. Titles get lost, and it's just kind of a pain. In some states, they require you to get the titles notarized when you acquire or sell, you know, a mobile home. And if you didn't have it notarized, well, now you got to go back to the owner and get it notarized, or, you know, there's a lot involved. So a bill of sale is not, you know, the end all be all. So you should put money, if you're buying a park, you should put money in escrow, you know, and I think anywhere around $3,000 per title is fair to hold back, you know, and getting a bill of sale at closing is what you need. But then you need to hire a company like MH Title Brokers or Snickfish that will go out and actually acquire a title for you, go through the abandonment process, put the ad in the newspaper and so forth. And it just takes time and follow-up, but you don't want to forget these. And then, hey, you sell a home on an RTO and then they pay it off, but then you don't have the title. So definitely, you know, want to make sure you're accounting for this up front and not being surprised by this on the back end at closing when they're like, oh, hey, you know, here's the keys. And, you know, you're like, oh, where's the titles to the 25 park owned homes? And they're like, oh, sorry, you know, we don't have any of those. You don't want that to be the case. So also recommend getting, you know, a UCC filing done where, you know, with an attorney that will see if there's any tax lien issues or personal property liens on any of the park owned homes before you buy these, just to make sure that they are free and clear. Let's see here. Number nine is not talking with the power company engineer and discussing power supply and whose responsibility is what when the new homes come in. So I bought a park, is my third park in Covington, Tennessee. It was Smithville Mobile Home Park. And I made a mistake where we bought this property and there were, I think it was 61 lots, but it only had 50 occupied. So we brought in 11 brand new homes, like this home right here, these nice vinyl shingle homes. And these homes were all electric, 200 amp panels on the inside. So the juice coming to these homes was daisy chained from one transformer. And there was like 25 homes on one transformer. For those of you that don't know what a transformer is, or, you know, are not electricians in your side gig, a transformer looks like this. If you could see on my screen up here at the power pole, there's also like big green boxes that can be a transformer as well. But a transformer should only service like 5 mobile homes. And since this was an older park, it had a lot of like 60 amp, you know, small homes. And when those were hauled out and we brought in these new homes, we were at a deficit and people were having brownouts and they didn't have enough juice from the main line to service their power needs. So we had an electrician prior to buying this park inspect all the pedestals and tell us, you know, if there was any code issues, things like that. But he didn't talk about the power coming in from the power company. And most power companies will actually pay for the transformers to get there, right? Because they're billing these tenants ongoing. But this one in Covington did not. And we had to do a capital call for $60,000 to install more transformers because there wasn't enough juice coming in. So we made a mistake. We learned from it. We corrected our due diligence process. Now, before every park we buy, we have the power company engineer meet us at the park and tell us, hey, when we bring in homes and put them on these vacant lots, who's responsible for what? You know, hey, or how many transformers are on the property? And then how many homes are on each transformer? And, you know, are we responsible as park owners from the pedestal to the house, which is most common? Or are we responsible from the transformer dredging a line underground all the way to the pedestal and then running it into the house as well and paying for the cost of the actual transformers, which is, you know, not normal. But in this case, we had to ante up and pay for that. And otherwise, the homes would sit vacant. So we did it. Long story short, we put agency debt on that deal, and it was a home run back in 2021. But at the moment, it felt like a complete catastrophe because we didn't raise enough money. Anyways, new homes, you know, in conclusion, new homes usually require more juice than older homes and have those newer 200 amp panels. Number 10, I'm getting long-winded here. Apologize about that. Number 10, due diligence mistake is not reading the Google reviews on the Google My Business page for the mobile home park before you buy it. This is huge. This is one of my quick things I do when I'm analyzing a deal for the first time is I'll look through and look at the comments and see what people are saying, right? I found comments like, oh, the roads are really bumpy, poor management, they're not answering the phones, you name it. You just Google the name of the park, the Google My Business, and you read what people have said. And if there's a bunch of reviews over 20 and most of them are good and it's over a 4-star, I would say that's a really good park, you know, that has good reviews. But it could be just one review on there that you see that you're like, oh, wow, you know, the roads are really bad. Another thing I've found is flooding. You know, hey, every time it rains, the roads flood and underneath my home, a bunch of water, you know, floods underneath of there. That is something that you can be on the lookout for. And then you can bring up to the seller and to the local city to, you know, because if there's a bunch of water flooding underneath homes every time it rains, that moisture barrier is going to cause the subfloor to rot out. It's going to cause a lot of damage underneath of those mobile homes. Mobile homes literally are supposed to be like the ground underneath of them is supposed to be like crowned so that water doesn't sit under there so that it flows away and doesn't cause damage to the subfloor underneath of the home. So check the Google reviews. It only takes literally 30 seconds to kind of scroll through these. And, you know, also to piggyback on that, when you're doing your on-site visit and, you know, go out to eat at the nearest restaurants closest to the park and ask the waiter, hey, do you know about the Deer Run Mobile Home Park over there in Salem, Ohio? And they say, oh, yeah, I know that place. You know, oh, what do you think about it? What's the reputation, you know, of that community? I'm looking for a place for my mom. You know, I was thinking of buying a place in there and see what she says. You know, you can learn a lot, but just take it with a grain of salt. You know, some people may have that stigma of, oh, it's just a dirty trailer park and they've never even drove through the inside of it. They just drove by it. So it's good to ask multiple people, you know, instead of just one. Anyways, I hope you got value out of this episode. You know, due diligence is such a big deal when it comes to trailer parks, and I feel like it's not talked about enough. So if you have any questions on this, feel free to reach out via my website. That's keelteam.com. And my name's Andrew Keel. Thank you so much for watching. Would you like to see mobile home park value add projects in progress? If so, follow us on Instagram at @passivemhpinvesting. For photos and awesome videos from our recent mobile home park acquisitions. Once again, that's @passivemhpinvesting on Instagram. See you there.